to the Far East Export Import Company, 27 Zapata Circle, Tijuana, Mexico.
Right. Go on.
Yes, sir. Mary had a little lamb. Stop. My dog has fleas. Stop.
Good. Needs a bit more. Marzy dotes and dozy dotes. And I'll be home for Christmas. You got that?
Just a moment, sir. Okay.
Sign it. Your loving son, Queen Victoria.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah, I stabbed a man in the heart.
I saw that. Brick killed a guy.
Did you throw a trident?
Yeah, there were horses and a man on fire, and I killed a guy with a trident.
Brick, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. You should find yourself a safe house or a relative close by. Lay low for a while, because you're probably wanted for murder.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's what it's called?
Hello, folks.
Hi, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob Seska here, and that's Chez Pazienza over there.
That's me.
I wanted to play that. I've been watching a lot of MASH. I've been TiVoing episodes of MASH from TV Land, and I think it's also
still my favorite show of all time.
Yeah. God.
I grew up idolizing Hawkeye Pierce and Bugs Bunny, which is what made me such a rotten shit.
That's exactly right. I so desperately, when I was really, I think I was maybe like fifth grade, I watched MASH all the time. And, I totally wanted to be Hawkeye. I had the, I convinced my parents to buy me a couple of martini glasses. And my room became a pigsty, almost like the swamp. And
yeah, I went to when the Smithsonian had the MASH exhibit after it went off the air. I went to that and stood in line for like 3 hours to see that. It was worth it. I was a huge, huge MASH fan growing up.
That clip at the top of the show was, I think it's just season two or three. It's the first episode with Colonel Flagg.
Colonel Flagg,
that's
yeah.
That's a scene where he's dictating a top secret communique, right?
Yep.
And I don't think there was any better guest character on that show. Any episode that has Colonel Flagg in it was just an hilarious episode.
Yep.
I mean, it's guaranteed. Even the later episodes when the show wasn't that funny, as soon as Colonel Flagg would come on, it was instantly, it sort of reignited the spark that the show had in those first three seasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, lots to talk about this week. I'm just running late today. It's just one of those days where I can't get caught up. I had to post my Huffington Post.
Your dog
thing.
Didn't shit in the yard again, did it?
No.
The hell it is in the parking lot.
You know what? There's a whole other thing with that, and you know, just not to get too deep into the issue because it's not particularly exciting for people who don't really give a rip what happens to me in my personal life. But you know, we moved into this new place, and the owners of the apartment were well aware of our dogs. We have two large dogs, and they accepted the dogs. The dogs are listed in the lease. Everything is cool with the dog. They vetted the dogs insofar as they knew that the dogs were large and so on. And then, you know, a couple of days in,
one of the dogs will be running as John McCain's running mate for president.
Well, you know, a couple of days in, we get a knock on the door, and it turns out that there's an association here in this building, and they don't allow dogs. It turns out they don't allow dogs after all. And the landlord.
Wait, there's the association or an association? I mean, do you have like roving gangs wandering the halls?
It's actually almost as bad. It's the condominium association. And And so we discover this, and we've already moved in. We've already bought, you know, some furniture. We bought a bed, you know, things to, because it's now two bedrooms, so we have extra furniture. We go from a studio to a larger place, and you need the extra furniture. Well, now we don't even know if we can stay.
And you guys lived in a studio?
Oh, yeah. We were jammed into something like a this windowless box, basically.
Cozy.
It was like staying in a storage facility or something like that, except it had running water. And surprisingly, granite countertops. That is the truth.
Yeah, but it's Hawaii. How much time do you spend indoors anyway?
Well, you know, if you work from home, I was in there, you know, 10 hours a day working and doing the stuff that I do. So, you know, you want to be able to, you live here.
Alerting the Japs to what's going on at Pearl Harbor, sending secret communiques over.
I've got my Morse code. You know, your
son. The chair
is
against the wall. John has a long mustache.
Signed, your son, Queen Victoria. You know, now we don't know whether we're going to stay. So now there's this whole controversy on top of everything else. Like, normal life issues are stressful. And then we've got this lumped on top of it, you know, where we have to convene an emergency meeting of the board of directors of the building and see if we can make it.
Where they discuss the Seska problem.
Oh, God. I mean, it's really just brutal and ridiculous. I mean, it's so clearly an issue where there needs to be a compromise, because we have a contract, a lease with the landlords. You know,
yeah, they'll make you kill one of the dogs.
I couldn't even fathom that. I love our dogs.
Excellent.
But they're just big. They're big, and so they're discriminated against. You know, anywhere in this town, you try to get an apartment, you either have a dog that fits into your pocket or you don't get a place. You're essentially, there are like three places in all of Honolulu who actually.
I think I saw that on Fire Dog Lake, actually, earlier this week. They were writing about large dog discrimination and how much it angered them.
It's really one of those cutting issues. They were talking about it on the Republican debate.
It's a Glenn Greenwald civil rights issue.
But, you know, it's one of those things. And it's actually, it's funny that you posted something on your blog that I want to talk about, because it's something a little more general. It's not specifically politics, but it kind of applies to what I've been talking about. It's just one of those, this whole dog, it's just one of those nonsense kind of nightmare issues. Like it's a tempest in a teacup, and it shouldn't be an issue, but then it is, and then it occupies all your time. So, you know, my fiance and I are sitting here all half of the morning firing off letters to people and meeting with the landlord. So it's this whole thing. I'm trying to do my Huffington Post column and get that post. That's why the show, we started late this morning or this afternoon.
Right.
So,
you know, that doesn't mean shit to anybody, though. You post at the same time tomorrow morning. It only affects you and I.
Oh, of course it does. But if we sound a little frantic, you know, at
you
this
and me,
point,
pardon me, my right. Bad grammar.
So if we sound a little frantic and kind of off our game, yeah, then harried, then that's why. It's just we're running late getting the show started. So regardless, so you posted this great thing, I thought. And do you want to describe what you wrote? Because it's a post called, in quotes, "It Doesn't Matter." And
oh, yeah. No, you know, I was... Somebody I was talking to on Facebook was talking about the Dan Savage, you know, the whole "it gets better" movement for I guess specifically for gay youth, and you know, and it's certainly, you know, the heart's in the right place, but yeah, I wrote something and I basically said I'm going to start my own movement, except mine's going to be called "It Doesn't Matter," and the reason why is because nothing that happens to you as a teenager matters. Mm-hmm. Nothing that happens in high school matters. It's all bullshit. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, gay or straight, black or white, cool or goofy. Actually, it does. First of all, things don't get any better. Unless you're like Bill Gates or some shit like that, life as you go along generally gets crappier. You know, you get picked on in high school, sure. But you don't have, I think I wrote, you know, I said, you don't have bills to pay. You don't have, you know, exes trying to beat the crap out of you. You don't have a shit ton of regret for your therapist to help you with. You know, you don't have a life that you look back on and think, wow, this didn't turn out any way like I planned. And you got to mourn that. You know, getting stuffed in your locker is a lot easier than getting divorced, being unemployed, you know, having ungrateful little shits of your own, trying to piss through a prostate the size of a cantaloupe. You know, being a teenager is actually great. So it actually doesn't get any better. It just, it gets worse. And nothing that happens to you during your teenage years, with the exception of, you know, if you're one of the very, very few who suffers through some sort of tragedy or some sort of life-altering decision that's so ill-advised that it actually does have lasting repercussions, those kinds of things are anomalies. Nothing that happens during your teenage years means shit. We blow it all up when we're teenagers so that everything is massively important and melodramatic. And in the end, what you grow up to realize is that none of it means anything when you're a kid. It was all bullshit.
It seems like it does because we're pumping with hormones and, you know,
exactly. We're
falling in and out of love at the drop of a hat, and everything seems overly monumental. I know a lot of people who are glory dazers, who are they're like Uncle Rico from Napoleon.
Uncle Rico, yeah.
Napoleon still,
he wants to make state.
Yeah. Don't you just want to go back? Don't you just want to go back? And they live vicariously through their high school glory, and
right. They
don't. They don't live for what's happening now, or they don't, look at life as if it's going to. And see, now this is, I think, where I differ with you.
But that's the thing. Once again, the best years of your life. You know, I mean, look, even if you got the shit kicked out of you, even if you got stuffed in a walker, you get your head stuffed in a toilet, I guarantee you it's better than, you know, getting prostate cancer.
Well, that's true. I believe that my high school years – and this is me personally. I don't know about anyone else. I don't care. But me personally, my high school years sucked. They sucked the big one. They were terrible. I hated high school. It wasn't until I became technically an adult and went off to college and experienced independence and started experiencing the world that life actually became better. Now, yeah, I mean, that's true that our body starts to disintegrate. I'm 40 years old now. That's, you know, it's inevitable. And, you know, crappy things happen like, you know, and like the recession and all of the awful things that have occurred as part of the recession. Now, when you're a teenager, you've got a safety net. You know,
right. That
is unless you're a homeless teenager or something.
Right.
Awful
like
has
like I said,
you.
There are anomalies there. Yeah. Of course there are. And, you know, and I'm, you know, come on, I'm kind of talking out of my ass anyway. But look, there are anomalies and there are exceptions. But I mean, for the most part, for most people, you know, I think high school is, you know, you find out later on that the things that happen to you later on have very serious repercussions. And as the clock ticks away a little bit, we're just going to depress the hell out of everybody with this, by the way, especially starting right off the bat. Just go fucking kill yourself right now. Crawl into a shower, drag in a hairdryer, because it's all downhill from here. You know, the things that happen to you in high school, I think the point that I was trying to make is the things that happen to you in high school, yes, you get beat up and it sucks. Or you know, the right girl or guy doesn't go out with you and you know, and you pine for that. Unless you're part of that sort of, you know, the very small group that I talked about where something really terrible does happen to you, for the most part, there are very few repercussions from what happens to you as a teenager. You know, and they don't last, if there are, they don't last for very long. When you become an adult, I mean, you can really fuck things up, you know, and you can fuck things up and man, that shit hurts and it lasts.
Oh yeah.
Those scars last a long time. You know, you're slightly overweight in high school and you cut yourself a little bit because you're unhappy. That goes away. It really does. If you can survive it, if you can get through it, if you can tell yourself, look, you know what, this is kind of bullshit and yeah, it's awful, but I'll survive this. You can go on and lead a very okay life.
But I mean, here's the difference. When something awful happens as a teenager, you don't really have the wherewithal or the wisdom to be able to fix it. But as an adult, you can kind of, yeah, the problems are magnified, but you at least have some sort of wherewithal to kind of solve your own problems. And if you have your faculties about you, it makes it even easier. If you know, and if you're using common sense and, you know, you're, you know, certainly there are things that are beyond our control, But you can kind of fix those things if yeah, at least right. the point okay. where
you're
you
talking
can come
to someone who's been married three times. Yeah, okay. And I'm 41 years old.
Yeah.
Not to get too personal here, but I mean, I, you know, like you, in a really bad recession and, you know, a terrible economic time, you know, I was going through major relationship problems, massive, oh my God, fucking massive relationship problems. And one of the problems I had was, you know, I was married to somebody and I've explained a lot of my marital issues on the blog, so I'm not going to get too deep into it, but look, you know what? I'll fess up here. You know, I was with somebody who her belief was that if things happen in your life that, you know, if shit's gone bad, it always has to be your fault or there always has to be something you can do about it. And when, you know, obviously when the recession hit and things really, you know what it's like, oh, yeah. a lot of us started to feel like, you know, we've lost control of the rudder here and we're just kind of drifting and we're going where the current takes us. And no matter how hard you tried to get a hold of things again, it was really, really tough. Well, I got shit for that. You know, I caught a lot of crap for it, for not being able to, you know, somehow pull myself up by my bootstraps. And that angered the crap out of me. It really did. It took me, you know, I'm still trying to sort of get over that, you know, having to go through that. And it wasn't easy.
No, I
because,
can't
you know, on top of the, you know, the Great Depression, there is the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
If you get my drift.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine being in that situation where you're, you know, you're experiencing these things, these, you know, things that are driven by the economy and the crash of it. And then you're with someone who's basically saying, fuck you, get over it. And
would you like to know why? Because the person that I was with, and seriously, this is, and I'm not bad mouthing her. This is a fact. The person I was with, works at a job where the people that she comes into contact with and still does. And once again, I'm not insulting her. This is just the way it was. The people she comes into contact with are all unbelievably wealthy. And they're the people that a lot of us tend to bitch about a little bit when it comes to not wanting to sort of, you know, kind of screwing the economy a little bit. Or the ones who are benefiting from a lot of the economic policies that, you know, that we've sort of decried a little bit. You know, she deals with people and they are titans of industry and they're Wall Street hotshots. You know, the corner office types in Manhattan. And these people, they didn't suffer a bit. And every single thing that this person that I was with, you know, her entire life outside of home life had to do with, you know, had to do with sort of hanging out with those people. And yeah, look, you do that enough. And then, yeah, it kind of starts to seem like, well, they're doing great. Why aren't you? Why are we not doing like this? Like, well, oh, you know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so I wanted to touch on that. If you want to go read the post, it should be still on your main page, shouldn't it? It was only
yeah, and you know,
day or two
and
ago.
Everybody knows that's as soon as I wrote it, I put a picture of a kitten above it because I'm like, this is so misanthropic what I'm writing. This is the height of misanthropy. So you know, this is I know when I say something that's just completely, you know, like, holy shit, all right, now I'm going to go kill myself. So I'm, you know, obviously, I throw that kind of stuff up once in a while just to fuck around. So don't anybody take it too seriously.
Well, suffice to say, if Uncle Rico came by with his Napoleon Dynamite time machine.
The crystals.
Yeah, the crystals. Don't you just want to go back? I would say, no, hell no. No.
I mean, you know, somebody asked me a long time ago, they're like, you know, didn't you skip out on school? You know, and I'm like, no, I slept through high school. Are you kidding me?
This is my senior year. Well, I slept right. through my senior year.
I slept through high school, and I got, you know, and I mean, look, school wasn't always great for me. I was, you know, when I was in eighth grade, I went to like a hardcore Christian school, and I was not Christian, B, I was a short kid. I mean, you know, I'm still relatively short now. If you put, you know, for people like listening to this, if you put like, you know, me and Bob next to each other, we look like the beginning and the end of the Russian dolls that you open up. Like the very first one you open up and the last one, that's me and Bob standing next to each other. But yeah, I mean, you know, and it sucked. But even now, I mean, it's, you know, it was still easier than being an adult. Yeah. You know, it's like I said, and I think the reason why is just because there's very little that happens to you during that period where that has massive shock waves that reverberate, unless something really terrible happens to you, or unless you're one of the people who makes just those massively fucked up, you know, teen mom style decisions. Mm-hmm. You'll pretty much come out of your teen years unscathed.
The big downside of being an adult is I wish there were things that I could unremember. There are things that I have seen and actually been a part of that I just don't want to have in my brain anymore. I mean, just awful, awful things, you know, as inconsequential
as I ever did.
Yeah. I mean, just everything from just embarrassing things I've said or written or just like, just ugly things that you see just passing by. You know, you're in Manhattan and you see something terrible, you know, in an alleyway, or, you know, you're driving down the street and you see some awful, you know, like a dead kitten along there. You don't want to see those things. You don't want to remember those things or know that they're somehow stored in your memory banks until the day you die. I think Louis C.K. on episode of Louis, I think it was this week, said something to the effect that there are things that he has done that were so embarrassing that he decides that he will never tell anyone ever. Like there are certain things that he did that he'll take to his grave.
And the funny thing is, I wrote, I'm shameless plug here. I wrote an entire book about a year and a half period in my life where I was fucking reprehensible. I mean, I took, there's a certain sort of selfishness in doing that I took this year and a half period in my life. I wrote a book called Dead Star Twilight. It's basically about a period where I was living out in L.A. and I was really stupid and started doing drugs, like a lot of drugs. It caused a major downfall, blew up my second marriage. I got out, went to rehab in Miami, which is where I was born. And astonishingly, like less than 2 weeks out of rehab, I'm no wife, no job, nothing, out of rehab, and 9/11 happened.
Ugh.
And I'm sitting there. And by the way, for anybody who happens to listen to this, who has ever gone through rehab, especially getting off an opiate, one of the things that they don't tell you is that you don't sleep. For some reason, it completely robs you of like your ability to do all the most normal things, like when you're finally off of it, like eat and sleep. I didn't eat and sleep. So like I was awake, because I stayed awake for days after I got out. And then, so I was awake when 9/11 happened that morning. And I'm just like, crap. All right. Now I got up, I'm like, what do I do? Suddenly it just sort of washed over me. I'm like, I have nothing holding me back. So I got in a car and drove up to New York with the idea of handing out water or something like that. I'm like, I have to, this will give my life purpose again to do something when people need you. And I wound up working for NBC News for down at Ground Zero and the Armory at 25th and Lex where the families were and I found kind of purpose again. But either way, I wrote this book about the entire experience. And in the book, I'm still shocked sometimes to go back and read some of the stuff that I wrote. I mean, I divulged some of the worst, most disgusting, the stuff that I pretty much should have never told another soul. And I was dumb enough to put it all down in print. So,
but there have got to be things that you've done that you wouldn't even do that. I mean, we're probably the most honest writer on the internet in terms of actually just revealing just the deepest, darkest things about yourself, and that's really to be applauded and admired. But there have got to be things that you just you kind of think back and go, you know what? I'm not even. There's no chance in hell that is ever going to make it to the blog or to an update for the book. Nothing.
I killed a man once just for snoring too loud. I used to say that one of the things that scared me the most about like going to the edge of the Grand Canyon would not be fall. This is probably like pathological. I'm sure this screams tons about me. Like anybody who's a psychologist listening to this, my fear about going to like say the edge of the Grand Canyon was not that I would fall in. It's that I would jump in. That something would suddenly overcome me, and I would just be like, "Gotta jump." It's every once in a while I'm like one of those crazy thoughts that I think I'm going to actually like really act on it in impulse insanity. And it's a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Now here's a really quick question. This is, you know, we're really dragging this out, but you don't tend to write a lot of the same stuff that I do, but have you ever written something that you really regret? I do that all the time.
Yeah, I wrote an entire book that I kind of regret. No. I regret
your publisher. I know that.
Yeah, I do. I do regret the publisher, but because the book was intended to come out like months before it actually did. It was intended to be a pre-election book, and it came out like a month after the election. It was kind of a waste.
But, and that's a shit feeling, because writing a book is like having a baby.
It was the most difficult thing I had ever done. It actually, as far as writing goes, it required almost as much discipline as just about anything I've accomplished. I mean, it was forcing yourself to sit and write every day until actually have it make sense in some way. But, you know,
the final copy of this book, it's finally going to, you know, I've been offering it for essentially pay what you want as a download on my site, which you can still do if you want it. But it's going to come out in print soon. And the print copy is like 386 pages. So it's, you know, that's not easy to do.
Yeah. Well, there are things I've written for the Huffington Post. I can't even count the number of posts I've added to that website. But I think if you look at the archives, if I go back through, you know, there are a considerable number of posts that I kind of – there are certain things I've written in those posts, or they were just too inflammatory.
Right.
Just like,
yeah,
oh,
that.
God, some of those things – it's almost like for me, looking at previous work, I just don't like looking at previous work, because it's almost like looking at, speaking of teenage years, it's like looking at those yearbook photos and going, oh, my God, I can't believe I wore my hair like that. You know,
that's a great point. Yeah, it is like that.
You just want to move past it. And I, you know, I just constantly feel like whatever I'm doing now is as good as I can work, and the best stuff that I'm producing is the stuff that I'm producing now, and
right,
and
you're always getting better, which you are.
Yeah, that's what I try to do, and then so therefore anything I've done in the past is just like
Well, the only reason that I'll go back, especially with the blog sometimes, is because I'll look at sort of the evolution of, as crazy as it sounds, the evolution of me, of the way I write, what's going on in my life. The blog has become sort of a fun little, not just a time capsule that has kind of a story arc to it, but to see this, the way that I wrote, you know, when I was in a relationship that I was really, you know, happy with, I wrote a lot about, you know, sort of the darkness of my past, but there was this free flowing, like everything's, you know, sunshine and roses now, you know, and then of course it got, you know, it got really brutal as things started to kind of fall apart. But I get what you're saying. Mine is actually the people, quite frankly, the people that I beat up on.
Yeah,
because I mean, I have plenty of times now where it's like, you know, like I wrote, I think the last thing, it might actually be, I think the last thing that I wrote for Huffington was when Cenk got canned from MSNBC, and I kind of beat him up a little bit. I mean, I was pretty fair. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I said, I'm like, you know, he can hold his head high. I think that he did the right thing, but you know, but I said, I'm like, I don't like him on the air, and I think he's, you know, he's kind of a boob, and you know. And I kind of felt a little bit bad about it, because I started watching some of the Young Turks, and it's like, you know, he is good on the internet. He's not great. He wasn't great on MSNBC, and it's funny. And I kind of started to feel a little bit bad. And then I watched, believe it or not, I just happened to be like sitting at my computer at 6, and I turned it on and watched a little bit of it today. And I heard him just start up about, you know, Obama's an idiot and he's failing us, and I'm just like, oh, I'm so glad I wrote that, you fuckwit.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
You feel like you, yeah, like, you know, God, I kind of regret beating up on that person.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's, you know what I regret more than anything else are memes. There are, I just read my old shit and I go, why was I pounding that meme to death? Like, it's some, like wingnut, or not a wingnut, but like a blogosphere word or something that was going around at the time that everyone was using and that I actually used. And I just like, why did I? So now, in what I write, I try to avoid coming up with clever words or you know, just I try to avoid.
Like you said, it's the equivalent of wearing your hair in a certain style, and you're like, that's gonna go out.
Yeah, it's like, you know what I compare it to? If Star Wars had contemporary music in it instead of like, you know, a classical score, it would have been so dated and awful. And it had some sort. If it had music like this. You know, can you imagine? Yeah. And so, you know, what
but
I try
hey,
to
don't,
do...
don't say that, because seriously, Lucas will go back and put it in.
That's right. But anyway, so show brought to you today, as it always is, by Bubble Genius at www.bubblegenius.com. It's the best damn soap in the world, and we have a new message from them this week, and here it is.
At Bubble Genius, we know that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and sometimes all you've got is man's best friend. We know you'd do anything for your precious pup. When he's a good boy, you give him his favorite treat. When he's gotta go, you take him for a nice walk. When he destroys your favorite shoes, you scold him, lament, and go shoe shopping. And when he eats God knows what and his ass becomes a dirty, stinking mess, well, we've got your backside on that one. You know that we Bubble Geniuses make fun, awesome soaps for people, but did you also know that we make stuff for your best friend? We've got dog soaps, shampoos, and conditioners that'll clean your disgusting doggy in no time and leave him soft, cuddly, and smelling super. And we don't stop with the de-stinking there. We also make Kismet, our flea-repelling doggy perfume that leaves your pup smelling sweet and dreamy. Doggy kisses leaving you offended at your pup's palate? Turn those sour smooches to sweet with Kiss Me, our all-natural breath spray for dogs. Works wonders on humans, too. Pamper your precious pup with Genius products and more at bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Do it, do it, do it. Go and subscribe to the show, and make sure if you go to Bubble Genius and buy some soap products for your dog, enter the promo code Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, and get 15% off your entire order. Please support liberal and independent businesses.
Were they insinuating that they make soap to clean your dog's ass?
Yes, they do. And you know That's what? Lovely. It's actually it's one of their finest soaps. It's actually good for humans too. It smells good that you want to use it on yourself. It's not like it's not made from dogs. It doesn't smell like dog food or anything. It actually smells really good, and it's actually probably my second favorite of their soap products for personal use. So. I was thinking about this. Is it appropriate that we're doing a dog's commercial this week because of, you know, our dogs being potentially kicked out of this apartment, you know? Mm. And I was thinking, suddenly this came to mind. This thing from Snoopy. I don't know if you can hear this, but I looked this up on YouTube. Snoopy gets kicked out. You know, Snoopy gets kicked out of the library.
No dogs allowed.
No dogs allowed.
No dogs allowed.
So that creepy No Dogs Allowed song.
Was that like Thor Ravenscroft or whatever his name is, the guy who did Tony the Tiger and the Grinch? That sounds like him.
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Yeah. I remember being confused by that Grinch song because it was actually not Boris Karloff. It was Thor Ravenscroft.
Thor Ravenscroft. Yeah, that was his name. The guy who he probably died, I think, but he did the voice of Tony the Tiger.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Just a killer set of pipes. God, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll get some politics here today. And I think part of the show, and it's always been this way, is to talk about our personal lives. And it's always been, and we don't do it every week, but I think I think it actually enriches the show. So if you don't like it, suck it.
Excellent.
So the Republicans had a debate Monday night. I don't know if you saw this.
And if you do, I'll marry you.
did you watch the CNN Tea Party debate Monday night?
You know, I obviously saw the Survivor-esque beginning of it, which was just embarrassing. Yeah. I mean, it really was. They started the thing like a game show, and, you know, and then, of course, Human Lunesta Wolf Blitzer just put me right to sleep. But I did see the clips, so I'm aware of what happened.
Have they replaced Wolf Blitzer with an animatronic Wolf Blitzer? I mean, the guy is really like
Wolf
one of those.
Wolf Blitzer was always an animatronic Wolf Blitzer.
Is he really? Is he like that in person? Is he just completely like the Wolf kind of embodiment of the news anchor, where he's just everything is this and he's, there's no human emotion there?
No. Actually, you know, the funny thing about Wolf is that, you know, and I've told people this before. Wolf's a really good guy. He's really easy to work with. He's really nice. He's not, you know, a jerk or anything like that. He's just, you know, I mean, on air these days, I mean, obviously the guy really is a machine in the sense that, you know, for a while there, he was doing, I think he was doing like 4 or 5 hours of news, four hours of news a day, oh, plus yeah. weekends. I mean, he was really, you know, he was on the air all the freaking time. And, you know, I mean, yeah, he's kind of dull and he doesn't really make waves. But you know, I mean, God, the guy's been there forever. You know, he was one of the ones in the in Baghdad when it first got bombed back in, what, 91?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, he was Peter Arnett and John Holliman.
Yeah.
And Bernie Bernie Edwards.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think Wolf Blitzer was actually the was anchoring. And oh, no, he wasn't anchoring. He was like the Pentagon correspondent.
Right.
So he was Wolf Blitzer actually made a name for himself, as most of CNN did during that first Gulf War. And I remember seeing Wolf Blitzer, and he was either the White House correspondent or he was like the Pentagon correspondent. So he was always right. The guy reporting when Colin Powell or
Bernard Shaw,
Dick Cheney,
by the way, I'm sorry. I'm like idiot. Bernard Edwards was the producer of the Power Station record. I cannot believe I just busted that crap out. I suck. See, that's what your high school years do to you. I'm like, Bernie Shaw. Yeah, right. Oh, no, Bernard Edwards produced Power Station.
The producer of the Power Station album.
Shit, yeah.
That's a bit of obscurity, you know, and I love that album. That's a great album.
It is actually a really good album.
I never would have memorized who the producer was.
Yeah, Bernard Edwards, because he was in, I think he was in Chic. I cannot believe that. I totally had a brain fart and fucked that up, but I actually know who Bernard Edwards is.
The Power Station was like a supergroup made up of Duran Duran and who else?
Was Robert Palmer. Taylor yeah. and John Taylor from Duran Duran and Tony Thompson.
Okay.
Tony Thompson, who I think died. I'm not 100% sure because he's a kick-ass drummer. I was like, oh my God. That drum sound on that record when I was growing up, because I've been playing drums since I was 5.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I wanted that drum sound so badly.
And Robert Palmer's dead too, isn't he?
He is. God. Yeah. They're all, that's like, you know, the final destination is coming for the entire Power Station.
God, you know, we're in our 40s now and we're talking about 80s pop stars who are dead.
I know,
it's just like, oh, that guy's dead.
Right.
You know, you get to a certain age where it's just like, well, you're looking through your record collection and you're looking through pictures of people you know and going, well, he's dead.
Right. Yep.
Man, that was scary.
Anyway, we were talking about
the Republican debate
and the hell that was the Tea Party debate, which is ridiculous anyway. Because you know, I don't, you know, you and I talk about this a lot. I don't go off on the you know. I don't jump on board the hardcore left bandwagon when they get pissed. But they absolutely have a point, the people who said, look, you know what? Progressives do have a very loud voice. You know, a lot of times we know they're mocked by quite a few people, sometimes including me. You know, if you go, you know, if you're one of those people who I think bashes Obama for no good reason and is self-defeatist. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you don't see CNN or anyone rushing to do, you know, to force the candidates to sit down in front of a group of avowed liberals and answer questions for them, you know, and those people are going to, you know, the pendulum will swing back and those people are going to start really influencing elections again at some point. I don't think you've driven them out. My God.
Well, see, I wrote my whole Huffington Post thing based upon what I observed at the CNN debate. And, you know, I hate to single out CNN because they're not the only guilty ones. But really what's going on is hurting democracy. I mean, it really is, because it's just and it sounds almost so super. It sounds superficial and repetitive to say this. But, you know, that introduction where they were introducing each candidate with nicknames.
And they had little cutesy names for him, like the professor, Marianne.
Yeah, exactly. The Hamburglar. You know, it was just like, and then the post-debate analysis. I mean, what happened during the debate itself was awful, and just the same, you know, unchallenged questions and responses and who scored better and who had the better zinger. I mean, that's what it's entirely come down to. And instead, what we ought to be seeing here in the context of these debates and more broadly in cable news is the press explaining these things to us. Why is Mitt Romney's or is like Rick Perry's health care policy, is this actually a plan that will work? And if it's not, tell us why. If it is, tell us why. Explain it to us. Because beyond that, it's just becoming like a game show. I mean, that entire debate was presented from beginning to end as if it was a game show.
And that's really all it was. It's game show. It's flashy graphics. It's politics as horse racing and other sports metaphors. And it just, it does nobody any good. And it's shameful and embarrassing. And we will all suffer accordingly because the media and the press has let us down as badly as they have.
Well, yeah. And, you know, again, I feel like I'm covering familiar territory here, but, you know, especially now, I mean, I just, you observe everything that's going on in the country, everything from the economy, healthcare, education, the political grandstanding, the divisiveness that's happening now, and you wonder, good Lord, is there any way to resolve this or to at least make it better? And by presenting serious political matters in the form of, you know, the family feud, seems like it's just not helping. It's hurting and it's damaging what remains of, you know,
right.
What remains of what ought to be a vibrant democracy.
Yeah, of course. You know, they're asleep at the wheel. They really are. And it's like I said, we're all going to pay for it. We are all going to pay for the Fourth Estate abandoning its post.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like I've got to say something, even if it sounds like I'm being overly idealistic and shouting at the raindrops. I mean, I just, if I have a chance, if I have an opportunity to say, you know, you guys got to do better. You got to shit can some of the hack analysts and replace them with some serious policy wonks who can explain in the most objective way possible why, you know, policy X is going to hurt us or policy Y is going to help us. Whether or not, you know, Mitt Romney's plan for the economy is going to be more effective than the Obama plan for the economy. Please describe these things to us in detail. Don't tell us who won and who lost, because ultimately that information is inconsequential. It simply does not matter whether or not, you know, Michelle Bachmann said something ridiculous or someone interjected a remark during Ron Paul's response to, you know, Medicare.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Well, CNN is going, you know, and all things considered, I do think that there are certainly places where CNN covers news very well. But I think that especially when it comes to politics, they are just far, far too wrapped up in how cool they can make things look. And that started a few years ago. You know, Dave Borman, who went over to work for Current TV, you know, used to be their D.C. bureau chief. I mean, he was the person in charge of all of that. And he was the one who introduced the ridiculous hologram and the YouTube debates. And I wrote a really sort of scathing piece about, you know, going back to CNN a couple of years ago after I had already been fired. And I had sort of an encounter with Borman, you know, and not a bad guy at all. But, you know, but I thought that his sort of, his way of doing things was very sort of, that was the direction that CNN was moving in, which is under John Klein. Of course, it's not, John Klein isn't there anymore. But what they were moving toward was a very sort of glossy, stylized, you know, here's all the little trickery we've got, but there's really no explanation behind it. It just looks really cool. And that's what they do now.
Well, and the question is, does that actually increase their viewership other than to, you know, point and laugh at it?
I mean, it probably does a little bit, but trust me, I mean, from a producer standpoint, it really just gives them the ability to go, wow, look at that. And they do, you know, look, it's like the kid with the biggest toys, and you've got the coolest, most amazing toys ever when you can you know, have fucking Wolf Blitzer talk to a non-existent Will.i.am who suddenly appears out of nowhere in the middle of your studio. You know, that's the kind of thing that as a producer, you're like, wow, love it. Does it really matter? Not really. It really doesn't do shit.
Yeah. And that's just it. I mean, that was kind of a broader point that I made in the Huffington Post today. And that is that, you know, CNN was basically a laughingstock for its coverage and its presentation of the debate.
Sarah Palin loved it.
Well, yeah. I mean, no one's going, hey, you know what? That stage looked kick ass. Or, you know what? Those ridiculous introductions as though, you know, these are all usernames in World of Warcraft. That is so oh, my God. I can't believe they did that. What a phenomenal
TV
thing.
TV people are. That's one of the things that you need to know about TV people is that they program for TV people. They really do, you know, to the point where it's, you know, it's mind boggling to watch. But yeah, you know, they program because they like, you know, they think like TV people. And one of the hardest things to do as somebody who works in television is to step outside and truly see things the way the viewer does.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems to me as if people are watching those debates. There's a certain group of people watch them to see their favorite candidate perform well or to root them on or to see other candidates do poorly. But I think a majority of people want to genuinely learn about these candidates and discover whether or not their policies are effective. And so, therefore, I believe that the press has an obligation to, and in this case, cable news, has an obligation to explain to us whether or not policy X works or policy Y doesn't work. And they're not doing that. Instead, they're spending all of their time telling us who won, who lost, and doing ridiculous things that appeal, as you said, only to TV people. Now, if there were a million TV people tuning in, they might have something there, but there's not. There's an audience that they need to serve. The press is the only industry specifically outlined or named in the Bill of Rights. There's an obligation there to uphold a standard of integrity. And the cable news media, I think.
Well, the interesting thing about it is that, you know, they at the beginning, that silly ass Gilligan's Island setup, you know, like I said, the, you know, professor and Marianne and, for, you know, the skipper and all that shit. The interesting thing is that by doing that, they, you know, by doing like sort of an almost Monday Night Football style of setup, it's like they were trying to create a story out of it, to create a narrative. And the fact is, it's like you want a narrative, you know, the outsider, the this, the that. I'll give you a fucking narrative. Eight people or however many were up there who have the potential to control the United States of America. Mm-hmm. There is nothing more dramatic or more important than that. You don't need to hype this up. It's as big as it can possibly be already.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's ridiculous to watch them create drama where they don't need to. They really don't. You know,
right.
especially it's almost offensive when you think of it that way, because with everything that's going on in people's lives right now, I mean, you know, with parts of the country just really, really suffering and you know, the economy in the most fragile state you can imagine. And they actually have, it's almost offensive, they have the balls to sort of create this bullshit drama. It's like, you know what? No, things are dramatic enough. You don't need to sell me on this shit. All you need to do is give me the fucking facts.
That's right. And, you know, look, I understand.
Do your job.
And I understand that both of us complaining about this and just everyone was sort of waving our fists at what Chuck Todd calls the refs is kind of an exercise in futility. But you know what?
Yes, it's absolutely nowhere.
There's part of me that says that, and then part of me that goes, you know what? I think social media has become powerful enough that if we do apply enough pressure through social media, it is possible to change these things. It was possible to get, you know, a couple dozen, if not more, maybe upwards of 40 advertisers to drop the Glenn Beck show just by applying pressure through social media. Maybe 10 years ago, we didn't necessarily have the, and by we, I mean just the general public who happens to be online. We didn't have the power 10 years ago to be able to make things like that happen. But I think now if enough of a shitstorm is created, then perhaps there's a shot. I mean, and I don't know. I don't know that the pendulum is going to swing all the way back to where it was with the media 40 years ago when Meet the Press, for example, was literally five or six members of the press just grilling the living hell out of a politician for, you know, in this sweaty cigarette smoke filled studio until they were just ready to burst out of their brains and run screaming out of the room.
Which is the way it should be.
Which is the way it should be. Exactly. It's not going to swing all the way back to that. But if we can get a certain amount of change instituted in the near term, it will only serve to help democracy. You know, there was a reason why the founding fathers included the press in the First Amendment to the Constitution. I mean, it's not even somewhere in the 9th or 10th. It's right there in the first one. And it's specifically, it's the name of an industry, and the framers of the Constitution felt that it was so important that they put it in that First Amendment. And so I don't know if they would have been entirely thrilled with the CNN debate Monday night or the Fox News debate from several weeks ago where, you know, everyone got asked a silly question, or even going back 4 years ago. Remember when the Fox News had a dinger when time was up, like a light, right? And there was like a buzzer, like a game, like Bob Barker would show up with a Plinko stick. It was that kind of a game show environment. So I feel kind of bad for singling out CNN, but you know what? I mean, it's all part of the same trend.
Patty Chayefsky predicted it in 1976.
There you go.
And knew all about it. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the bottom line here is that as long as it's about money, and it's, you know, for the most part, to some extent, there are these massive communication companies, and this is really, you know, this is really just tilting at windmills. But, you know, there's these massive communication companies that own almost everything you see and hear now, especially when it comes to mainstream media. And, you know, and because of that, news, the press, it's all a product. It's all a product to make money. And as long as you can do that, you know, I mean, Jesus, when I got canned by CNN, one of the things that I wrote that I really do, you know, and another one of those things that I look back on and I'm like, wow, was I really kind of like too hard? You know, was I just pissed off and I sort of flew off the handle and wrote something kind of a little too angry at CNN just because I had gotten fired? Who the hell knows? But no, one of the things that I said in that piece was, and this I stand by, during our reviews at CNN, you know, they ask, I think it was like five essay questions you had to answer. And one of them, I think it was the last question, was, what are you doing to increase shareholder value? Yeah. No person in an American newsroom, certainly not the CNN newsroom, should ever have to answer that question. You should never, if you're working in a newsroom, you should never hear the word shareholders. Never. Yeah. It should never come up. The idea that you're making money for somebody should never enter into any of your decisions at any time ever. I mean, I understand. I think that the defense that they would use is not, look, hey, you know what, don't cover this story. But look, are you doing things to sort of make things run more efficiently? And that's fair enough. But still, you know, I should never have to know, working in a newsroom, that I am beholden to a shareholder, that I am beholden to the budget.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as we said on the show many times, those departments used to be separate. You know, it used to be the news had its own box that it could remain in and untouched by the corporate side of the business. And so it wasn't driven so much by ratings and revenue. And, you know, there are several movies, actually, that kind of detail what can happen when those things crisscross, when the streams are crossed, to use Ghostbusters analogy. And that is, well, of course, Network and, you know, also The Insider, There's right. that great movie about the tobacco industry and 60 Minutes movie. Coverage of that whole blow up where the guy came forward and revealed information about a major tobacco company and they're trying to protect him. And then 60 Minutes and CBS kind of, you know, trying to repress that reporting. Right. And so there's a great scene with Al Pacino sort of just reaming out Mike Wallace and who else?
Hewitt.
Hewitt. And so it's really worth watching if you're interested in finding out how we got to this point. And also broadcast news, yep. I think. Broadcast news is another that kind of covers it a little bit, not as much as these other two. But the prescience and of course the what has actually come to pass now. It's just unbelievable to look at and quite depressing at the same time.
But in the wake of the Tea Party debate, we got to hear Michelle Bachmann talk about we got to hear her go the full retard.
Yeah,
and talk about mental retard. She pulled like a Jenny McCarthy. I think she was trying to say autism. By the way,
yeah, I don't know.
Just confused it with retardation.
Of course, she was. She was brutally wrong. I mean, I don't.
Right.
Of course, the jury is still out, and I'm completely against the idea of forcing people to get this vaccination. I think the jury is still out in terms of whether or not this vaccination will actually have a variety of negative side effects. And so, therefore, I don't know if it's time to be mandating that people get the injection for HPV. And so the controversy arose because Rick Perry, who's all about small government.
Government not interfering in your life unless it's in your child's vagina.
Totally against the Obama healthcare plan, as well as the individual mandate, especially. And this guy goes and signs an executive order mandating that girls in Texas get this vaccination purchased by, I guess there are two companies that make it. Merck is one of them. Merck, who gave not $5,000 to Rick Perry's campaign, but something more like $30,000 to Rick Perry. Rick Perry's lied and said got $5,000. He got a lot more. It was like
the only reason that Bachmann brought that up is because she knows that he's the new shit. He's the new king of the campus. So she's flailing. I mean, and I think the thing that struck me most about that is that you could see it. It was a desperate move to sort of, try to sort of hang that HPV vaccine thing around him, which, of course, obviously he should answer for it. But I mean, to see her make that sort of widely kind of debunked, vaccinations cause problems with children argument. Which like I said, I think that's what she was going for, and she just fucked it up royally. It just all I could think was the things that the ridiculous lengths that the Republican candidates have to go to top each other, to continually get, to steal the spotlight away from somebody else. Rick Perry gets applauded because he kills, 234 people, whatever. Bachmann's thing is, I got to say that Rick Perry makes people retarded. I mean, that's what it takes. I swear, if this campaign didn't end at some point, can you imagine like the kind of shit that Republican candidates would eventually have to say to outdo each other?
Yeah.
By this time, like 2 years from now, Perry would be, the SS in Nazi Germany stood for Social Security. And Bachmann would be, I fucked Bigfoot. And Romney would be, I wear special underwear that protects me against evil spirits. And well, that's kind of true, I guess, isn't it? Now that I think about it.
Right. The worst thing about it is that they're just continuously saying the opposite of what everyone else says. So at some point, they're going to end up saying the opposite of what they just said, which they occasionally do. I think part of Bachmann's problem is she fired Ed Rollins several days ago. It was more like a week ago.
Yeah.
But I think, she was doing fine with Ed Rollins, and then suddenly Ed Rollins goes, and she just blurts out this big-time gaffe that she has to apologize for.
And Rollins, to his credit, Rollins is trying to cover for her still.
Right. show brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. And here now is their latest commercial.
At Bubble Genius, we know that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and sometimes all you've got is man's best friend. We know you'd do anything for your precious pup. When he's a good boy, you give him his favorite treat. When he's gotta go, you take him for a nice walk. When he destroys your favorite shoes, you scold him, lament, and go shoe shopping. And when he eats God knows what and his ass becomes a dirty, stinking mess, well, we've got your backside on that one. You know that we Bubble Geniuses make fun, awesome soaps for people, but did you also know that we make stuff for your best friend? We've got dog soaps, shampoos, and conditioners that'll clean your disgusting doggy in no time and leave him soft, cuddly, and smelling super. And we don't stop with the de-stinking there. We also make Kismet, our flea-repelling doggy perfume that leaves your pup smelling sweet and dreamy. Doggy kisses leaving you offended at your pup's palate? Turn those sour smooches to sweet with Kiss Me, our all-natural breath spray for dogs. Works wonders on humans, too. Pamper your precious pup with genius products and more at BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Enter the promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and get 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. Just a few things to before we wrap up the show, because we're running a little bit late. Well, we're running way late in real time, but in fact, the length of the show is running long at this point. We're trying to keep the show to an hour. Because before, we were doing like 90 minutes, an hour 45, something like that, and it was just becoming ridiculous to download. I'm getting emails saying, my God, Bob, the show is like, 10 gigs. What's your problem?
Once in a blue moon, it's not too bad, though.
Yeah,
it's a very special. It's a very special Bob and Chez.
It's a very special.
This is the one where, I admit that I was touched. Where Gordon Jump touched me, like in that episode of Different Strokes.
Oh yeah, the bicycle repairman episode. Yeah, we had our pictures taken with our shirts off by Gordon Jump. Oh my God! Yeah, that show went downhill right as soon as Dudley came on. And then there was that little mop top kid when Gary Coleman.
Yeah, Nancy Reagan showed up eventually.
Reagan showed up, and Gary Coleman's dressing up like Mr. T, and everything's going to hell, and life as we know it was collapsing.
Do you think Todd Bridges like had to hide his stash when Nancy Reagan showed up?
Oh yes. Yeah, I think the whole cast did. I think the whole cast.
Right, Dana Plato, exactly.
Dana Plato.
How can I leave her out?
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you saw this, but, Clint Eastwood, every once in a while, just blurts out something that you just kind of cheer for. Did you see what Clint Eastwood said this week? Or it's in the forthcoming issue of GQ. He says, I'm not going to do the voice, and I wish I had an audio recording of it, but the actual text will have to suffice. He says, these people are making a big deal out of gay marriage. I don't give a fuck about who wants to get married to anybody else. Why not? We're making a big deal out of things we shouldn't be making a deal out of. They go on and on with all this bullshit about sanctity. Don't give me that sanctity crap. Just give everybody the chance to have the life they want. Well, of course. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. Cheers.
And Clint Eastwood.
Or I'll kill you.
Or I'll kill you. Get off my lawn. And you probably saw that the New York 9th District went to a Republican this week. Thank you, Anthony Weiner.
The one thing that Anthony Weiner... What is it? The one thing Anthony Weiner actually managed to fuck? The Democratic Party.
Yeah, and that's, to me...
Thanks, Anthony, and your cock. We appreciate that.
That's exactly right. I mean, that to me is the indicator that Anthony Weiner is an idiot. Because if he was actually smart whatsoever, he would have seen that his behavior, should he be captured... Should be captured. This is like they're running around with a giant net. Should he be caught in this behavior would actually completely sideline and distract the press for a good, I don't know what it was, 3 weeks, and then potentially hand the Republicans yet another vote in the House. And that's precisely what happened.
But I stand by the thing that I wrote actually not long before he resigned, which was basically that he didn't need to resign. He did not need to resign. If you know anything at all about the way the modern news cycle works, our attention spans suck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, something else would have happened. Somebody would have gotten his dick caught in something, or, you know, a hurricane would have, you know, hit fucking Alaska or whatever, and we would have been distracted. And that's the way it works.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And he would have, honestly, he would have been able to ride it out.
Well, you know, that's the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans, you know, they stick around and they don't care.
Exactly.
You know, David Vitter is still a member of the United States Senate.
Exactly. He could have, Wiener absolutely could have wrote it out, so to speak.
I mean, really, and he didn't, as far as we know, and maybe there was another shoe that was going to drop, or another pair of pants, as the case may be.
Right, but do you really think him quitting actually would have stopped that? We'd, you know, shit.
Yeah, well, they would have found out whatever it was, and he would have been further disgraced. But, I mean, it's just, I mean, from beginning to end, he just completely botched the whole thing.
Right.
Lied about it. Swore up and down. I mean, he lied to Rachel Maddow, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah, you don't lie to her.
The other thing was, is I don't think the Democrat who was running in that district in the special election was helping at all either. The guy looked like if Hitler had a toupee, a bad toupee. That's what this guy looked like. And you don't win the New York Ninth if you're looking like Hitler with a bad toupee. You're just not,
right.
It's just not happening. You just look creepy and weird. And so, you know, and I think those things sadly end up mattering to a lot of people, especially in smaller congressional elections or local elections. They end up saying, well, this guy's kind of freaking me out. I don't know if I want to vote for him anyway. But anyone Absolutely. Who said that it was a reaction to, or the canary, I got some tweets people say, this is a canary in the coal mine. Things are going to go haywire next year. It's not. It's just a react. It's what happens every time there's a resignation from office in disgrace. The people react against that.
Right, and it could very easily be a shit candidate versus a much better candidate.
So that's why there's a Republican there. Mm-hmm. It's the weird, creepy Hitler with the toupee guy, and it was a reaction to Anthony Weiner being a colossal effing moron.
Yep.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you next week, Jess.
See ya.